Are you ready?
I am, yes.
Okay.
Welcome to the Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome with Melissa Kircher and Wendy Bowlesby.
Welcome, dear listeners, to Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome. I am Melissa, and way over there across the country is...
Wendy.
And we are here once again to bring you items of joy that we discovered over the last week or so that hopefully don't include, like, severing your Google Fiber line in your front yard. Or I'm sorry, Wendy. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. But we are still here. Yay. So, dear Wendy.
It's good news, right? Because we finally have the landscaping done. It's all done. Mm-hmm. Yay. I have lovely plants. One of them is just growing where my Google Fiber used to be.
If it makes you feel any better, I don't have Google Fiber at all. So...
At the moment, neither do I.
But that does not spark joy.
It does not.
What does, Wendy? What sparks joy for you?
What sparks joy for me? Melissa, have we talked about Saltburn?
We have not talked about Saltburn yet. I have not seen it yet, actually, but I'm very interested to hear what you think about Saltburn.
I know that at Fantastic Fest, friend of the show Barb Lind saw Saltburn and was like, Wendy, I want you to find this and watch this because I very much want to hear your take on it. I finally watched it while Barb was in Africa, and we have not had a moment to talk about it yet. And then there was a few weeks ago when I was hanging out with the Cargills, and Cargo was like, that is a movie that deeply divided people. I bet you're going to like it, though. I bet you're going to be one of the people who likes it. And so when I watched it, I got to the end and I texted Cargill, you're right, that was totally my jam.
Please do tell me. Tell me more.
Oh, this movie, it's wiggity whack, but it's wiggity whack in a way that I personally very, very much enjoyed. This is tough, but also, okay, heading slightly into the spoiler zone. I don't think this is going to spoil anything for you, Melissa, because I think this very light spoiler is written all over the movie from the get-go. Like, technically this is a spoiler, but I guess it's possible you could watch the whole movie and not pick up on the very clear things it is leading to. But this, there is a little bit of talented Mr. Ripley going on with this.
I was exactly going to ask you that same thing. I was just going to say, so is it talented Mr. Ripley? I bet it's talented Mr. Ripley.
Fucked up talented Mr. Ripley.
Ooh, even better.
Like, there is some deeply uncomfortable scenes that happen in this movie.
So it's Purple Noon with more fucking, I surmise.
I had to look away. And it's okay. Not even that it's graphic at one point. It's just really deeply uncomfortable. on this one particular scene, there's another scene that I think is also just something I know I have never seen. I don't know if it's ever even been put on film before. I kind of loved what it represented. So the main character, who is played by, help me out.
Barry Keoghan?
Keegan. And I was like, his B name, Kagan. BK, Burger King. Barry Keoghan. He is so, he has such a blank affect with so much going on. Like, it is Mads Mikkelsen's level of stoic, like, of just... Okay. What is this man like? Still waters are running fucking deep. Mm-hmm. And you see the obsession play out, and it's fun to peel back the layers on this obsession. And again, slight spoiler, a very much Eat the Rich vibe, which is exactly why.
Ooh, okay. Eat the Rich. I love eating the rich.
And it's got, with Nail and I,
Richard E. Grant?
Yes. Right?
You know, it could only be like three people. Because there's Richard E. Grant, there's Paul McGann.
Yes. Richard E. Grant. So we got
Richard E. Grant, okay.
Richard E. Grant is wonderfully delightful in it. And Gone Girl... actress, she's so great in it. I love her so much. I'm getting so shitty with names as I get older. I can tell you what movie they've been in. Like, they play the parents, and everything that happens there is delightful. Saltburn. I think it's on Prime. I think that's where I watched it, but okay. It's definitely available for streaming, definitely available for rent or buy. It, yes, Melissa, I very much need you to see this movie so we can talk about it.
I have heard the keywords that will lead me to that thing, so hooray.
the final nail in, I am gonna watch that, was at my birthday, sorry for the dog being crazy, at my birthday, and Tony came over, and Tony was talking about the fucked up Valentines that were from Saltburn that she found on the internet. And I was like, wait, what? And she's like, if you haven't seen it, like, it's not even a spoiler, they just really won't make sense. And so after I watched it, and I went and found, she sent them to me, and Oh, Melissa.
So, well, after I watch it, I will text you, and then you can send me the Valentines, and you can share your joy with me fully.
Yes.
And mayhaps I will add the link to the show notes, so others see.
I like the way you think. So, Melissa, what has brought you joy recently?
There's two things, and one of these I know will not bring you joy, but I do want to talk about it very briefly, because it does relate to the second one. So the first one is, on my birthday, as per tradition, I go out and about, usually by myself, sometimes with another person, but usually by myself, and I have adventures wherever I am. A lot of times I travel for my birthday, but today, or that day, 2 weeks ago, I was here in town in Minneapolis, and so it's always a challenge to find new things to go do in Minneapolis, given I've lived here for like 50 years. So, I did various other things that I'll wrap around to one of the other things I did, but I ended the day by seeing a movie that I had not seen, which is always, you know, an easy one. Well, they had re-released Tenet. Not only had they re-released Tenet, it was on 70mm film.
Ooh.
Right? And so I was like, nice. I'd never seen Tenet before. And I know Christopher Nolan is definitely not in Wendy's wheelhouse anymore, but sometimes... I'll get back to that point later.
I want to be clear, he makes brilliant films. I often even enjoy watching them, but they, much like Fincher, they are at their heart cold and mechanical to me.
Yeah, and so is Kubrick. But anyway, so I go to see Tenet, which I had never seen before, and beautiful, buttery 70 millimeter film. And I will say, it was fucking great. It's the experience of watching it was fucking great. The movie itself, I think, I wouldn't describe it as a mess. I would say it's a little bit of a misfire, but I did really enjoy the hat trick of it, and I like how everything came together, and it, you know, kept me engaged all the way through, and I like the performers, and so, you know, yay, I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it. And I loved seeing it in a theater on 70 millimeter film, because that was awesome. So I had a delightful time with that, and if you haven't seen it, the way it winds up in the end is really fascinating, because I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody on the planet who tunes into movies knows the thing about Tenet is time flows backwards and forwards at the same time. There's I'm explaining for anybody who hadn't seen it. Well, the final scene is kind of a battleground sequence that runs forwards and backwards at the same time. And it's interesting how it's portrayed in the movie, how it's used tactically. And it's the hat trick of it that's the main deal. And that's the way it usually goes for Christopher Nolan's movies. And I feel like the world would be better if we just admitted that Christopher Nolan's not like one of the great auteur directors who reveals more about the human element of this world or anything like that. He is a very good populist director. He is a very good director for spectacle. So kind of akin to Michael Bay, but maybe a little bit smarter. So
he's a gimmick director,
but his gimmicks are really good. So
yeah, they're really. They're mind gimmicks like what if time like backwards and Dunkirk, what if three different storylines on three different timescales, right? It's an intellectual gimmick, it's a mind gimmick, it's a story gimmick, but it's still a fucking gimmick.
Still a gimmick. Well, I mean, you're not going to learn more about the human condition from a Rubik's Cube either, but a Rubik's Cube...
It's a fun puzzle.
So, anyway, I enjoyed Tenet. Well, 2 weeks later, exact same theater, exact same screening room, I got to see another 70 millimeter print.
Of?
Of Dune 2.
Oh, okay. Right? Have you read the... I have not watched it yet. I have to be clear. I adore the first one. I love the look of it. Have you read the Dune books? And if so, when?
I read the first Dune book, and that's the only one I fully read. I read the first one first when I was 9 years old.
Oh, Jesus, Melissa. That was your precociousness getting in the way.
Oh, that is a frequent thing in my life. Oh, yeah. Well, I was reading Stephen King at 7. It was so weird. My mom figured that if I could understand the words, I might as well be able to understand the content. And, you know, that's the way kids were in the 70s and 80s. We were feral.
Yeah.
But I reread Dune a few months ago. Okay. And it was the same copy. It's the same paperback that I had read when I was a child, but it went AWOL for like 20 years, and a friend brought it back to me like 2 years ago. So it's like, well, I gotta watch.
That's sort of sweet.
Yeah, in the front of it, it says property of Missy Kircher in my really bad childish handwriting and my room number in pencil. So yeah, I read my old copy of Dune. But yeah, I've refreshed since watching the first Villeneuve Dune.
I just want to be clear why I can keep up with, like, you can't spoil it for me. And
right.
And I have been, thanks to TikTok, getting a lot of clips of interviews and with not just the stars, but about what Denis Villeneuve's like goal was. And of course, some clips of the movie, too. But see, I read all the way to through God, Emperor of Dune, which is the fourth book. And yeah. I've read them several times. Like, it's not
okay.
It's not like top 10 favorite, but it's a compelling universe that I often go back to because it is so interesting and so thoughtful. And what I love, because I loved the look of the first one. They got so much right, and the politics and the threat that is the Bene Gesserit, which really easy to overlook. And then what is really exciting me that I can't wait to go see it. I don't know when that's going to be possible given our current schedule. But what I love is hearing that Denis Villeneuve gets it, that Paul is an anti-hero, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is a guy who was fated to be a demagogue, a fascist demagogue who is the catalyst for a universe-spanning religious jihad. Like, they even call it jihad in the books. So, yes, definitely you can feel sympathy for Paul, who is absolutely trapped in the mechanisms of what has been generations building towards him. But at the same time, like, he ain't a good guy. So I cannot wait. And oh my God, Melissa, if you've not been paying attention to the red carpets for this movie, you need to go find those videos, because the red carpet fashions that especially Zendaya, to a lesser extent, Timothy Chamomile, and somewhat Florence Pugh, but mostly Zendaya. Zendaya, that she gets fashion as art. Fashion comment in a way that you rarely get to see. I just love it. Anyway, so please talk to me about Dune 2 with all of that being said. Very excited, very excited.
Okay, Dune 2, they do change a little bit from the book, particularly in how things wind up. This is a little bit of a spoiler, but
I'm not going to. Okay, spoiler zone for anybody who cares. I don't care.
Spoiler zone. My big thing was Alia is not born by the end of the movie.
Oh.
Yeah, and I can kind of see why it may have been done, to like streamline the characters that are already there. And, you know, the movie winds up in the same place.
So he conquers and does everything within months?
Well, there's a... It's hard to say. It's more like things go pretty much as they do in the book. And Jessica is pregnant with Alia, and Alia does talk to her during the pregnancy, and all, that stuff is all intact. But Alia is not born by the end of the movie. So...
is she not Leto's daughter?
She does not kill the Baron, so...
okay.
But those things still happen. It's just... She is basically introduced as the unborn child, but I figure that... if I remember right, I heard that Villeneuve was wanting to do a trilogy, which I presume mean he's going to do Messiah, which means I think he's going to make Alia a big thing in whatever the next movie winds up being. So,
I mean, Alia is a huge part of Messiah, even bigger.
Oh, she's huge, and she's fucking terrifying.
And even more so in Children.
I won't spoil. There is a vision of her after she's born, and it's revealed in Dune 2 who will be playing her.
Yeah, I've put those pieces together. Yeah. It's not hard to figure out when you look at red carpets. Why is that star there? Who are they playing?
yeah. Anyway, it's the movie's action takes place on a scope that's just intense. It's The sense of place in the movie is fantastic. You've never seen a desert so lovingly filmed since Lawrence of Arabia. And yes, I realize we're watching Lawrence of Arabia in space, but so, you know, that's apt. But it's gorgeous. It's so gorgeous to look at. And everything is so well put together. And the action sequences are fluid and stunning and amazing to watch. And when Paul makes the turn to seize power, basically, it really is terrifying. It's really, really to the point of the book of, yeah, this is scary shit, and scary shit's going to happen now. So I think you'll really like it, Dwindy. I think you'll really, really like it. And of course, all the actors are just hitting for the fences and just having a great time. And yeah.
I hope this really puts Zendaya on the map as one of our, like, I think everybody acknowledges she's a star. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they remember to acknowledge she's a great actress.
She's very talented. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I love Denis Villeneuve as a director.
Yeah, me too.
Because he, to me, all the discourse around Nolan, shift that over to Villeneuve and you're probably more on the right track in terms of deeply intellectual, really, really great storyteller who really knows how to dive into themes and ideas by using what the characters are.
Yeah.
To do that. So like the characters never get lost in his ideas. The story never gets lost. It all is so beautiful. And it's a fucking gorgeous film. I love Denis Villeneuve so much. So, I'm so glad that you got to see that.
Yeah, Wendy, you have to see it in a theater. Whether or not it's on film, whatever you get, but see it in a theater. The scope of it is amazing.
Absolutely. I may even try to go see it on IMAX, which is like an effort. The big hurdle is we're going to be traveling for an extended 5 days going to New York this weekend. So that's like a getting everything ready to go and then coming back means the soonest is maybe next Wednesday, maybe.
Right.
Ironically, talking about Tenet, because I remember watching it and I saw it in the theater and I remember being like, I don't know what anybody's saying. I don't know what's going on. Oh, I think they were just explaining what's happening there. I mostly remember being confused by the whole movie because at critical moments, I could not understand what the actors were saying. So, and I know that this will chafe his soul. He will never know I said this, but dear Mr. Christopher Nolan, I think I might rewatch Tenet and I'm so glad I get to do it at home where I can turn on the fucking subtitles.
Right.
Then I might be able to follow your movie.
I think also, you know, I have audio processing problems. I didn't have a problem with Tenet, but I think that's a testament to the folks at the Imagine Willow Creek Theater, because their sound system and whoever does their sound there is really good at what they do.
I'm quite sure, like, if you're watching a 70 millimeter, then chances are good, like, your tech geeks came out of the woodwork to project that for you. Right. To give a great experience. But for the most part, like, everybody's like, oh, you should see, fucking Nolan's like, oh, you should see movies in the big screen. It's like, yeah, where it's framed incorrectly. Nobody's paying attention to the sound. The speaker is out it's way too fucking loud. Like, I mean, honest to God, you are kind of rolling the dice these days with the quality of the film, the quality of the experience when you go to a movie theater these days.
Right.
Because, you know, capitalism, and we don't want to pay people to actually become experts at projection or sound or anything anymore. We don't want to pay for experience. So, yeah, like, there have been so many sad times where it's like, oh, I can't really. Oh, the sound. Oh, the picture. So no doubt when I saw Tenet in the theaters, like very, very much so, that's probably what it occurred. And I do not doubt that you got it. You probably got a really great experience getting to see it with good sound on 70mm. That is to be treasured.
And instead of doing trailers in front of it, they had the curtain down and they played the soundtrack to Tenet like a intermission entr'acte.
Nice.
And then they rolled the curtain up, and then instead of trailers when they turned on the projector, they showed us a scene from Dune 2.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we went into Tenet. It was really good. Also, we also do know that Nolan specifically is bad at recording dialogue because he likes the naturalness of it or something, you know, yeah.
Or something.
His mixes are always a bit low on the dialogue end.
And again, because he's a gimmick director, because on some level, he doesn't think what the actors are doing is all that important.
Yeah, funny that.
Funny that.
So yeah.
So Melissa, what has brought you joy this week?
Okay, so once again, when I was doing adventures for my birthday, the big thing I figured out, it's like, oh, there's something I'd never done. I went to Paisley Park, Wendy.
Ooh.
Right? I'd never toured Paisley Park in all my years living in Minnesota.
I've never been either.
You should. You should tour Paisley Park next time you're up here. You need to have a little Minnesota vacation, and we can have like a Xanadu holiday together in real live in person, and we can go to Paisley Park and we can do stuff like that.
Oh, that would be amazing.
So anyway, Paisley Park, for those of you who are not local, Paisley Park was Prince's music studio here in Chanhassen, Minnesota. And It is now, I think it's still an active studio, but daily they run tours through there and run it like a museum. So even on the basic tour that you can take is like an hour and a half long, and you tour all the main spots. Like, you get to see Prince's office, and you get to see the little cantina they had, and there's literally a vending machine, Prince-themed vending machine in the cantina, in the canteen, and you get to see one of the main studios where so many records were recorded. You get to see the sound stage that's there, which is like where Graffiti Bridge was filmed, the music club, a whole bunch of the spaces in there. And of course they have other longer tours that take you through even more of the space. And it is fascinating. So you get to see, yes, you worship at the altar of Prince, but also it's a testament to how Paisley Park also fed into the careers of so many other big music artists of the 80s, 90s, 2000s. And it's fascinating. You walk into that main studio and the sound in there changes because it's a studio and it's, you know, acoustically perfect. And it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then the guy running the tour turned on the big sound system in there and played a bit off of one of Prince's albums. It's like, yeah, this is nice.
Nice.
And, you know, of course, you know, here and there, they've got various Prince's guitars on display and, you know, the little design details of the place. Like, there's this beautiful atrium that has skylights and everything's purple. And then you look up and there's like fake clouds painted on the ceiling and doves. There's, of course, doves. And there's real doves, too. There's a cage with real doves in it.
Oh, God, of course.
Of course. It's very on brand, Wendy. It's very on brand. But get this. So for the last couple years, I think it was in 2021, they announced they had a special exhibit at Paisley Park, and I really wanted to go and I could never get tickets for it. And then I eventually just figured it had run through the end date that was initially posted for that exhibit. Mm-hmm. And so I gave up trying to get tickets for it because everything was sold out. Well, unbeknownst to me, they had kept that exhibit on for like an additional 2 years.
Oh.
And it was still there. Do you know
Melissa.
What it is? Do you know what it is, Wendy?
What?
His shoes. His shoes,
oh,
Wendy.
Shit.
They had his shoes. They had a special room with like 300 custom-made Prince shoes. All
so
these
many
shoes
heels.
Are custom made for his tiny little feet with the heels. And every single one, handmade, custom built for his foot. And they are, and like every single fancy Prince outfit he had, which was, there was like a tailor's room in Paisley Park where they just made Prince clothing. Every outfit he had a matching custom set of shoes. And they were all there, Wendy. They were there. They were there. I saw so many shoes. And there was a light show that went with it. They lead you into the room and it's dark. And then there's like sound and there's music. And then there's like a little light show and there's strobes. And then the shoes happen. So, yeah, like floor to ceiling mirrored cases of shoes. And in the middle of the room was a 3D printed piano, like a full size grand piano with more shoes in it. It was fucking great. And according to the tour guide, that was the last day it was open.
Oh, Melissa.
The next day they were coming in on Monday to tear down that exhibit and put something else in that space. So just by happenstance, I was there the last day, and the tour guide was like, "I'll never see this room again. I'm so sad." It was full of shoes, and there was like custom Batman shoes, and there's the shoes he wore.
Yeah.
He wore at various notable concerts. Like, these were for the MTV Music Awards, and these were for the Oscars, and these were, it was pretty cool. It was really cool. They had a TV playing interviews with the people who made his shoes, and you would have loved it, Wendy.
Sounds amazing.
When you go in there, they take away your phone, basically. You're not allowed to take any photos inside until you get to a certain point in the tour. Like, once you get into the music club area, they'll give you, basically unlock your phones and then give them back to you and you can take some photos. But most of the tour, no phones out, because I would have taken so many photos for you, Wendy. Those shoes were amazing.
I know you would have. Like, there had to be a reason. I know I would have gotten texts with nothing but shoes. It would
nothing
have been great.
But shoes. So many shoes. Every single shoe in there you would have gotten a photo of. And by God, if in the gift shop they had a giant tome called Prince's Shoes with beautiful glossy photographs of all of the shoes, I would have bought it for you. And then one for myself as well. But it was amazing, Wendy. Wendy, that brought so much joy to me.
It sounds like it. You've been waxing rhapsodic for quite a bit.
I know. It was so fun. It was, I really did it. Well, I mean, I still say the peak birthday adventure experience is probably waking up in Antarctica, but Princess Shoes, pretty close. Just saying.
Okay, I'm glad we have a scale there. Good.
Yes.
Good. I'm glad we have a measurement scale there. Good to know.
Also, you know, Elton John's final, you know, show at Madison Square Garden. But anyway.
Yeah, whatever.
Wendy.
Whatever.
Wendy.
Yes.
Wendy, what brought you joy?
I have finally started watching Strange New Worlds. And it is just as delightful as everybody said.
Isn't it fun?
It is so great. Anson Mount is such a... He vibes Shatner even more than Shatner. Like, because he's got an even lighter touch. Like, doesn't take himself quite as seriously as Shatner did. But I just watched last night, I think it's episode 8 of season 1, The Elysian Kingdom or whatever. And that's the one where they're all in, like, fantasy book characters and everything, and getting to see the captain of the Enterprise, Captain Pike, who is so good at being in charge, at being a leader, and he gets thrust into this fantasy character role where he is a cowardly courtier, and he clearly the actor is just having the best time, and he's I'm just like, oh, okay, I love everything that's happening here. The actor who plays Spock is delicious to look at, and he's got this voice, and so I'm like, who is this actor, this beautiful low voice and that jaw? And then I'm like, what, who's playing him? Oh, and the actor's name is Melissa Ethan Peck.
What's that?
He's the grandson, yes, of Gregory
of
Peck.
Of course.
And like, once you know it, you hear it and you see it. Yeah. And he is beautiful. And he's he's a great Spock. And Ortegas. And there's a young cadet, Uhura. Oh my gosh, she's gorgeous. And Rebecca Romijn is playing his number one, his first officer.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it already vibes so queer. And so like, so many lovely nods and hat tips to the original series. Like, yes, yes, it's delightful. I'm loving it. This is my new favorite thing. I'm probably going to finish it and then be like, Theodora, I got a thing for us to watch now. We're going to watch this.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely great.
Yeah, I haven't specifically watched it, but my dear husband does watch all of the Star Treks. And so occasionally I'll be doing something else and he'll have Strange New Worlds on. And yeah, that shit's good. It's really good.
Very good. So that's all I got this week.
All right. Well, thank you very much, dear listeners, for joining us in the Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome. We hope we have brought you some joy that you can either enjoy again or go find for yourselves and share with others, and so on and so forth. Exit non-intro, opposite of intro. What am I doing here? My name's been Melissa, and that has been...
Wendy.
And we will be chatting with you, joining you on the airwaves. No, these are not airwaves. These are digital bits. Digital bits. We'll be joining you in the digital bits. No, that doesn't sound right. We will. You can hear us next week.
Bites.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Bye.
Thank you for joining us in the Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome. Our theme song was written by Tim Wick and Jeffrey Brown and recorded and mastered by Chad Dutton. New episodes arrive almost every week. You can find us on iTunes and on other podcatchers, and you can also visit us and listen at our website, xanaducinema.com.
She's like, when mom, one of my classmates is sort of cyber stalking you. You're everywhere on the internet. Ma, and then they come home and they're like, Mom, he started listening to your podcasts.
Hello, Theodora's friend.
He said, wow, your mom swears a lot.